Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. On this episode, I, Leah, am bringing you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this spotlight, my co-host Amanda tonight and I are joined by author Jess K. Hardy. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
Jess K. Hardy is an award-winning, best-selling author of cozy, contemporary, and sci-fi fantasy romance. Jess writes about characters at any age, but especially over 40, finding second chances, proving that life and love only get better with time. Her work has been featured in Publishers Weekly and People, and there is a little bit more to the bio, but I didn't put that part in here.
No worries.
So welcome to the podcast, Jess.
Hello. Happy to be here.
So before we talk Bluebird Basin, which is the series that we want to talk to you about, let's get to know you a little bit. So what initially drew you to romance as a writer?
I grew up in the 90s, about to turn 50, and like, you know, golden age of rom-coms. And so I think my entry into romance was through movies at first. And yeah, I just like a lot of people at that time just absolutely loved romance movies. I mean, we had Dirty Dancing, we had When Harry Met Sally,
Oh, I love that one.
You've Got Mail. And then my favorite is one that's slightly lesser known. Well, two, Joe versus the Volcano.
That's such a good one. Oh, man.
Yeah, and Prelude to a Kiss. And both are Meg Ryan
Whoa.
movies. And both kind of showed me,
Not to interrupt, but we introduced my daughter, who is 11, to Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant, right? Brilliant.
I mean, I loved it. She was like, it's okay, but.
Yeah, maybe it's slower now for kids. I don't really know. I have a 17-year-old, and I don't think he'd be into it too much, but I was at the time. And
But
I think,
anyway, sorry.
Both of those movies really opened my eyes to what could be done with a romance story, because they are neither are traditional romance, and yeah, I think it kind of just started there, my love for romance.
Oh man, I love when Joe versus the Volcano. It's one of those
Oh,
ones that like
such a gem.
not a lot of people have seen.
Yeah, no, same with Prelude to a Kiss, and they're both brilliant and wonderful. And yeah, I've watched them both probably 100 times, so I'll be the one to see.
I mean, it's
But
Meg Ryan in like her heyday though too, so.
seriously, just being, yeah, everything just wonderful. So yeah, I think that's kind of where I got the bug.
So what made you write that first book?
So I've always been kind of a creative person, but it wasn't until probably 2016, 2017, I got a total hysterectomy. I have endometriosis and adenomyosis and it was probably the first time since I was a kid where I was not in pain of some kind for all but like 1 week out of bed. And also kind of hormonally balanced for the first time too. And I like creativity just kind of returned to my life when it had been gone for a really long time. And so that's kind of when it started. And then the first book that I wrote, I was living in Fort Collins, Colorado, but working in Laramie, Wyoming, which is quite the commute. And so I would stay up in Laramie 3 nights a week. So 3 nights a week, I had no husband, no kid, just me. And I started writing. And yeah, that's kind of where it started. And now, you know, I can't imagine a life not writing. So,
I mean,
yeah, I needed to free up space in my life that wasn't like really taken over by either pain or emotional
Oh, and you
imbalance too.
really like focus that creative outlet into like dealing with the grief of going through like the hysterectomy.
Yeah, there was nothing left for anything else
Yeah.
until that was taken care of. So yeah. Yeah. So if you're out there, if you're a woman and you're struggling, talk to your doctor.
Well, and Krista Sandor has like she has always shared how she started writing when she got her MS diagnosis, and she was like in the deep like feels of like her diagnosis and how it completely changed her life, and like she needed to focus
Well,
like those thoughts.
true, and I'm also a physical therapist. And I think the average for people finally getting an MS diagnosis is 12 years. So I can see it being similar. This like finally, I know, finally, yeah. And so that could definitely open up creative channels that have been busy doing other things. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah,
So,
interesting.
do you read romance also?
Oh yes.
Do you remember your gateway romance book?
I
Because
was
I
trying to think
personally
about
don't.
this. I do not. Yeah, I was trying to think about this. And I feel like the book, and it's not a romance,
Okay.
but it was the first, it's got a romantic subplot, and it was the first book that I read. I think I was 11, where I was like, oh man, that is amazing. And it's Eyes of the Dragon by Stephen King. It's his only fantasy book, and
Oh, that's a
it's
good one.
wonderful. Yeah, love it. And there's like a cute little romantic subplot in that one. And I remember that being the first book where I was like deeply, deeply in love with characters and heavily invested in their happily ever after. Just this little side couple.
Well, yeah, and you
Yeah.
don't always get that from Stephen King.
No, you
No.
really don't. Yeah, you really don't. And this was maybe, I think it was the first Stephen King book I ever read. Because I was probably too young to get into some of the heavier stuff. And I'm sure my mom was like, try this one. I think you'll really like it. And then after that, I read Dune, which also has kind of a romance subplot that doesn't end up, it ends up okay in the first book, but yeah, so I feel like I came into romance kind of through a side door, a little bit. But
I
yes,
mean,
I'm a
side doors
voracious.
are just as good.
We like side doors.
So, is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
Oh man. There's probably lots of advice. I would tell past author me to be really, really careful working with small presses and to make sure that that's what I wanted, and that, to be brave about self-publishing and not be scared of it. And that's what I tell baby authors now whenever they ask me about signing with a small press. Not that there's anything, I mean, a lot of small presses are wonderful. They just didn't work out for me.
Well, and a lot of people have gotten burned by them too.
Yeah. I mean, there's just in this day and age, you're just as likely to do just as well without them as you are with them. And then you're sacrificing quite a bit of your royalty. So just thinking about it that way. Probably to not get too attached to any story would be something that I would tell younger me. I don't think I would listen. Like younger author me would be like, that's impossible. But I think that's helped me a lot kind of maintain the ability to keep writing now is to, not get super attached to a story or where I think a story should be or how successful I think a story should be, because it's so much of it is completely out of your hands.
Do you
Yeah.
have any rituals or habits that help you stay focused?
No, not really. I work full time, so I just write
Right when you can.
whenever I have a spare moment. So probably not. I do have like a listening, like a writing playlist that I listen to.
Oh, we love a playlist.
Yeah, and it's the band The Midnight's instrumentals. That's all it is. But the second I start hearing that, it helps me kind of
It gets the flow
focus.
going.
And recently I've deleted all my social media apps, and I'm barely ever on social media. Has probably been the biggest game changer in my writing.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
mean it's a
For a
time
long
suck for
time.
sure.
It was. And I would be writing, I'd write like three or four sentences, and then I'd swear to God, I'd open my eyes and I was on Threads. And I was like, how did this happen? When did I hop over to Threads? I don't even remember doing it. So I think, yeah, like the divided attention problem was pretty big for me, getting pretty big for me. And so the first, few weeks off socials was pretty brutal. But now it's great. I feel much calmer and more focused when I write, and just in general about life. I've gotten real philosophical about social media. I've stopped using it.
Oh, I'm sure. There are days when
Yeah.
like I hate it so much. And it's the
I don't think
Wild
it's
Wild
good for us.
West. Oh
Yeah.
no.
Yeah, I don't think it's good for us. I think there was a period in time where there was a decent
Purpose.
community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Decent community. You could move the needle on social media as an author. I don't feel like you can really do that anymore unless you're super lucky or very beautiful, very young, very white. So I just think, yeah, it's not what it used to be. And so for me, I'm like, why am I still doing this? I'm not getting what I want to be getting from social media. I don't know what I'm getting from it anymore, except for, angry. Yeah, so pulling away has been really, really helpful for me. And I still have Insta for marketing, because I feel like that's
A need.
the safest place maybe to talk about books. And because it's, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to get into the weeds as much
No.
as the other sites do. So I use it sparingly, but for marketing, I'll hop on there. Yeah.
So for your writing style in general, are you a planner or are you a pantser?
I am historically a pantser, big time. I am becoming more of a planner as I write more books. And I think it's just knowing myself as a writer more, knowing my process, knowing how to tell a story better, maybe. So yeah, my first couple books, very much like this was my pattern. I would have a beginning, middle, end. I'd have characters, and then I'd kind of just start writing and kind of let whatever happened happened. And this was like very joyful for me, very like happy, creative way to write. And then about halfway, I'd really start to see the ending. So the second half, I would plot that out. But the first half was very free form, and then I would go back. And so there was a lot of work on the back end of having to go back through my first drafts. I basically say my first drafts are outlines. So that's, yeah. So having to go back through and then say, okay, how do I like what beats are missing? Where's the pacing off? Where does the story go off the rails? It's a lot more work on the back end, but it gave me more joy in the process of writing, which I think is so, so important. But now I'm actually finding joy in the structure and plotting the stories out a little bit more. So I'm hopefully going to get ready to start on a new book soon. I'm kind of wrapping up my sci-fi romance book two edits right now, and that book is completely plotted out. So it'll be interesting to see if I stick to the plot, which I probably won't.
Well,
And
do you have like a different style of writing when you go from contemporary to sci-fi, or do you kind of have the same process for both sides?
so
Because sci-fi,
there,
like you have to create the world and all those things, and contemporary, like a lot of times it's built in, but so do you have a different mindset on the different subgenres?
I don't think so. I think my sci-fi is very similar in vibes and in style to my contemporary. I always say that my sci-fi, they're books that take place on a pleasure cruise in the future that goes through planets. So I always say they're not. These are not alien, like first contact sci-fi. They're not like Ice Planet Barbarian sci-fi books, which
Pleasure cruise,
I adore
right?
those. But this is
Oh my God, I'm
different.
kind
It's
of stuck
like
on that.
contemporary. It's like a workplace romance in space. So there is a lot of world building.
Pleasure cruise.
Yeah, but so it's like Love Boat meets Star Trek.
Gosh, I'm gonna have to read all of those.
They're really fun, and the first one is really, it's very much like an office place romance in space. The second one, Gets a bit more sci-fi-y, like they end up off like off ship for a bit of it. But they're yeah, I think you would recognize my writing in
Leah's over
that.
there
I'm
downloading
just
them
reading the
now.
blurb. Sorry, I'm reading the blurb. It is right up our alley.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, get it. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Yep,
Yeah.
I
And
am
they're
downloading. exactly what she was doing.
Have
Great.
some
I get
tells.
really, really hard to find readers for this series. So anybody willing to read it, I'm thrilled.
Honestly, I like you had me at Pleasure Cruise.
Yeah.
I was good to go with that, but she's a hospitality specialist.
Yes.
Most luxurious and debauched pleasure
Oh yeah.
cruise. Oh
Yeah,
man.
there's like
Like there's
it gets
some
wild.
buzzwords in this blurb that I am all there.
I will say I do tend to have more fun writing the sci-fi books. They are just a blast
Oh, I'm
to write.
sure.
But yeah, I love my contemporary world too. And Bluebird Basin, I feel like the world building there is no less
Important.
like in depth than the world building in
Well,
the sci-fi books.
let's segue to Bluebird Basin.
Segue!
So,
Yeah.
this is your contemporary series. It takes place in Colorado,
No, Montana. Montana.
Montana, sorry. I
Nope,
don't know why I
great.
had Colorado in my head.
They're like the same. Yeah.
So right now it is three books, and
That's true.
there's some heavy stuff in these
Yeah.
stories.
Yes. Yeah, same with the sci-fi books. I don't shy away from and I think again, this is because I was raised on 90s rom-coms that were rom-coms, but always something deep happened in these
Well,
movies.
I saw this TikTok. I don't know if you've ever watched Greg from New Orleans, like the Gregisms and Mr. Greg. He's a teacher, but he was like, nobody understands like how like we are anxiety ridden people because the like reading the books of our youth, like they
Oh
were all
yeah,
traumatic. And he's like Old
very
Yeller
traumatizing.
and Bridge to Terabithia. It's like everybody or the dog is always dying. It's
Where the
like,
red fern grows,
yes,
traumatized me.
like. Oh my
No.
gosh, I remember getting like my fourth grade teacher read that to us, and like all of the girls were bawling. Like
Bobbing.
it
Yeah.
is like a core trauma,
It is.
essentially.
And then you always hear the thing with Gen X especially is we literally watched the space shuttle.
Oh,
Yes,
yes.
Challenger. Like we were in the library, even though I've heard people say that that's a myth because it wasn't televised. And I was like, no, we were in the library. I
I
remember. And
mean,
then reeling, just turning the TV off and reeling it back out. Nobody
Yeah,
could see
we
it.
have lived some like really
We got some
hard
stuff.
stuff.
Some stuff
But
in
yeah.
there.
But yeah,
So yeah, I have a hard time not including things that move me and that make it like this is life. This is life. These things happen. Especially when you're writing stories about people with substance abuse issues, like, yeah, there's going to be some heavy themes.
Well, and that's the theme, like addiction and recovery is like one of the major themes in these stories. And but I think that you treated it with such care in the way that the characters and the stories were created, it's very realistic in the ups and the downs
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
how it affects the people around them as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's important to me to try to represent that in a positive light, I'd say, which I do get, I've said this before, but I do get feedback occasionally that my books are too nice to addicts. And to that, I say that I completely understand this is not the reality of a lot of people with substance abuse issues, but these are romance books. They're not like manuals, how-to manuals on running sober living homes or addiction issues at all. So I just want to be like really clear on that, that these are still, they're full of romance magic. It's still, they're romance books, but I do and did try really hard to be just as fair and compassionate as I could with that representation
Well,
and
but
those storylines.
I think that you do grasp a big chunk of it because not every addiction story is the huge like trauma dump, trauma boom that other people experience.
Every story is
It's
different.
true.
Every
Everybody's
addiction is
stories,
different. Yeah.
yes.
Every person is different. Yep. Absolutely. I mean, they are all traumatic. That was not the right wording, but yeah, every story is different. Every story is each person. So I think that you covered of that like a variety of them in the way that they experience them, in the way that they're dealing with their recovery, in a very like each story is different.
I tried. So hopefully I pulled it off.
Now, one thing Amanda, you can jump in with any question you want. You're just having like a little moment there.
I'm just listening, but yes. Go
But
ahead.
so one thing
That
I do
was good. I
like
appreciate
now, book
that.
one and book two, like the couples are older, which we don't always get that in romance. So what made you decide to go that direction?
I was Ashley's age when I wrote Come As You Are, and I was like, where are the books for people my age? And so yeah, I just said, well, I'm gonna write one then. And it was really important to me to make it steamy. Like people our age having hot sex, like it was really important for me to do that. But I just didn't see why not. Like it didn't I like why not? Why wouldn't you? And then when I went on sub to try to sell this book to big publishers, I learned very quickly why not. But I will say there are more and more people writing books with older characters every day. The later in life Amazon category is getting
It
much
is
more
getting bigger and
competitive
bigger
and
every
bigger.
day, yeah.
So yeah, it's wonderful to see that. It is not easy to write books with older characters simply because there is this really weird ageism that comes out with responses that I get, and a lot of my friends who also write older character romances, that everyone acts too young. And it like that feedback just breaks my heart because I'm like, I am literally this person's age. Like, how are we supposed to act? Like, how are we not allowed to like get completely tongue-tied over a really good-looking, person? Are we? Yeah. So that to me, I like this. I was actually going to take a little break from writing older characters because I was just getting kind of beat down by, and I don't know if it's ageism. I don't know what it is. I think it's a result of just not having a lot of older people in mainstream media. So we don't know how we're supposed to look. We don't know how we're supposed to act. We don't know how. And so when you start to introduce older people into mainstream media again, there's like a little cognitive dissonance. There's like a disconnect between what maybe your parents act like around
Well,
you
that's something
and
'cause like
then what these people really are like.
when I think of my parents 'cause I'm 41, and so when I think of my parents at 41, they
Oldsville,
were very old then. Like, but I was 11, so it's like, but I don't f I mean, I might act the same way that they did, but like at 11, looking at a 41-year-old person, like they acted like
huge
a
difference.
it's so big, but it was normal, and it's like my 41 might be exactly like their 41, but my 11-year-old thinks that I'm super old. So it's like, who's to say how we're really supposed to act?
Just let it go. Like, just let us live. Just let us be. I work primarily with older people, and we never grow up. We never ever grow.
No. Like men continue to have 12-year-old boy like senses of humor.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, absolutely. And people still flirt. These 85-year-old women are still making it like happen. Like it's still,
Good for them.
we are who we are, and that we generally don't age out of that. I think people get burnt out, they get tired, they get annoyed with their kids, and that might be the picture of old people that is being painted. I don't know.
Yeah, and I feel like there's
Older.
that gap in between, you know, like you said, you've got the older people, like the 85-year-olds out here just kind of like flirting and cutting up, and then you have, you know, the 20-year-olds and maybe even the 30-year-olds that look like they're 20-year-olds. And then we just kind of have, we're like that little lost generation in there. And I
Because
love seeing
we're,
a romance like that though.
me too. But we're, and Netflix is just crushing it right now with so many romances with older characters. I'm actually working on a, well, I finished adapting Come As You Are as a screenplay.
Oh yeah.
Ooh. And we're just gonna see. I don't know what happens, but
I would be all over that.
Yes.
I'm really thrilled
Yes.
with how Netflix is really doing a lot of romances with older characters and just shows with older characters, which I think is wonderful. But yeah, there is this kind of like disappearing time in people's lives where you're working, you have kids, you are busy, you are just not like actresses and actors pull away from film because they're busy with families. And so I love seeing these like older, 50s and more actors coming back after the kids are off to college, whatever, and finding roles. And yeah, I think it's just so great. And we need more of that.
Well, and we like at the podcast have seen multiple authors who like they're starting writing at like 60. Like
Yes. Yeah.
they're creating this new career for themselves because they got burnout
Yeah.
and on their career. Like they've been doing it for years and years, and like, I need to do something new. And they're like, this is something that I want to try to see how it goes. And that's the thing, like we're getting to that point where like we are have been in the workforce for a while, and it's like we are the hamster on the wheel. It's like, yeah.
Yes.
It's
Very
not a
much.
fun
That's why
place to be.
I've switched jobs like, I don't know, six times in the last like 15 years, just because, I mean, that's one nice thing about being a physical therapist. There's so many different settings you can practice in. But yeah, you just get kind of stuck. And a lot of people can't just switch jobs. They can't go and just decide to work in outpatient or work in acute care or work in a psych hospital, which is where I work now, which is the most fun I've had as a physical therapist. But yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so we need these older voices too that
Yeah, I
have like,
mean, yeah. Sorry. I didn't realize
no,
you were still going.
sorry, I do go on.
No. I tend to interrupt at the weirdest times. That's why I don't talk much.
But then she feels
But
bad about it, and we're like, just interrupt
no,
us.
interrupt me all you want.
I was just gonna say, but it's also nice too, because we are all around this age, but I like seeing myself represented in a romance novel, but also just to, that we don't have it all together just because we're in our 40s or 50s. Like
No.
you don't just magically turn into a different person when you hit a certain age. I mean, it's like we're still these people, we're still figuring out life, and like you said, there's some choices that we just can't make.
Yeah.
We can't change some things, and it's nice to have that represented in a romance novel. So I appreciate it very much.
Yes, absolutely. Life hates stability. Like there is, it's a constant teeter-totter of having it easy for a second and then it getting hard again and having some challenge pop up out of nowhere when just when you think you've got it all figured out. Like there is no all figured out. And it'd be nice if there was. Wouldn't it be great? But
That would be
it doesn't happen
amazing.
that way.
Well,
And
and
there's
it
got to be some evolutionary reason for that. Something that keeps pushing us, keeps making us grow, keeps making us strive. And that is universal. And it doesn't matter how old you are. You're never like, all right, I'm done.
Well, I think one thing that I really liked about the books is book one, like Ashley's her dad has passed away, and so she's kind of in the grief fog and dealing with that. Book two, like Mira is dealing with her mom's like illness, and it's just, and I think
And her son, she is our sandwich generation queen.
yes.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things where, like, I just really saw myself in those characters. It's like, I'm very fortunate. Both my parents and both of my in-laws are still alive. But, like, they're all getting to the age where like health is dwindling. And my mother-in-law, like she's been battling bone cancer for 6 years, and it's one of
Oh,
those
sorry.
things where it is our normal, and it's like, but you never know, it might be that like that time. And it's like, but it's just such a real thing that so many of us are going through at the age that we're at right now. Like our parents are getting older, and if we're lucky that they're still alive and we have relationships with them still, like what is that going to look like when we're in those grief fogs?
Yes. I have friends who very much right now, parents are in the passing away like phase and having to navigate all of that. My parents both turned 80 this year, which is just messing me up. It is just messing with my head. Yeah, and that is another life stage that we all will go through. And that you don't see in media very much, like certainly not, as a romance, part of a romance story.
Well, and but I think I wonder if people are saying they're not acting their age because it's like when you are in these really heightened emotional things, like you don't always make the best choices. Like you do go through those like crises where like my uncle went through a midlife crisis and he like at like 55 or 60, he decided he was going to buy a motorcycle and move to New York. And it's like that is not what anybody saw coming. And so it's like, it's just so out of character, but at the same time, it's a normal thing that lots of people do.
Especially in the 50s, they say that's like your second life. Where things can really flip and really change. And like women can like especially I think come into certain power that maybe we didn't have before. And then there's the whole menopause thing.
Oh,
It's just,
jeez.
yeah, it's just, I mean, how can we have it figured out if we're basically thrust back into puberty?
Oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
When we hit her, but yeah, it's, people just don't know until you get here. You don't know.
It is a horrible place to be.
Yes, but it's also, there are also some really positive things about, like, I do not care what other people think about me anymore. And I used to be just eaten up about it. I also feel really competent in my job. I feel like an expert in my field. Like that doesn't happen. It shouldn't happen anyway in your 30s. You feel that way in
That's
your
true.
30s.
I mean,
Take a
some
breath.
people may.
They might. We feel that way. So yeah, there's a lot of changes that are really positive. And then yeah, I always tell people if they're struggling to go talk to their doctor about estrogen replacement. So that can help a lot too. There are options to make it a little bit better.
So, sci-fi is next. It's in edits. So that's book two of your Pleasure Cruise series.
Yes,
And
that's
then,
called, oh
no,
yeah,
go
I was
ahead.
gonna drop the title. It's called Alani and the Empath. And it is about she's a and it's okay, so this is a book that I wrote in 2020. It was my COVID book. And I did not, since I work in healthcare, I worked in skilled nursing, I didn't have any off time during COVID. In fact, I worked nonstop for about a month, like 13-hour days every single day. And so this story came along. Really, the heart and soul of this story is how it's important for people to have downtime. A little like it just came through so strong because I was so exhausted, and like writing was literally the only thing keeping me going at that point. But the main character, Alani, she is a half biologic, half AI bionic, and writing her as an AI now compared to 5 years ago has been so different because I'm completely reworking these books, almost completely rewritten. And it has been just fascinating kind of navigating that aspect of it with our relationship to AI in 2025. But she at the end of the first book, little spoiler for you, installs her puberty upgrade. So the bionics that were made after her were in puberty was integrated, like hormones were integrated,
She has
which
to
is
click a
it
button.
helps with like autonomous functioning. And her generation it wasn't, so they offer this upgrade. And at first she's like, absolutely not. And then she sees Sunny fall in love in book one and decides, well, I want that too. And so she is in a like puberty crisis at the end of book one, which continues on into book two. Sunny Sunistara recommends that she go and see the ship's doctor because she's going through all these changes and so many things are happening to her body, and it would just be nice to have someone to talk to. The doctor on the ship is an empath. His name is Dr. Simpson, and he is it's a challenge because empaths cannot read bionics. So
Oh,
his whole
interesting.
identity, his whole ability to be
He's
a
in
physical,
crisis.
he is in full crisis mode because he's never worked with a bionic before. Generally, they don't need medical care. And his ability to practice medicine is very much hinges on his ability to read his patients and see, you know, what they're feeling, and he can't with her. And so that's kind of the way it starts. And it's just really fun and really sweet, and it really dives into if, you know, when society, I'm sure it will, gets to the point where there are AI everywhere around us, autonomous, what rights do they have? What rights will they have, and how will we treat them?
Oh, I'm so intrigued.
Yeah, it's been really, really fun to dive back into it. So yeah, that I don't have a release date or anything. I tend to wait until I get copy edits back. Then I'll kind of set a release date for like a couple months from there. So
Oh,
should be pretty soon, I think.
I'm
Definitely get
intrigued.
it.
And then
Yeah.
are we staying in the sci-fi world after that, or are you flipping back over to
So
Bluebird
no.
Basin?
So Bluebird Basin 4, I don't know when that's gonna happen because I have this idea, the book that I've actually plotted out. And it's a story I want to see if we can try to go trad with again, my Asian
Okay.
woman. So I may take a little break from both worlds to write something completely new, and kind of see where that goes. And then I will probably hop back to Bluebird Basin 4, and then I'll do Sci-Fi Romance Book 3. And then who knows from there. I mean, I could write in Bluebird Basin, like I could Virgin River it and just write like 2 books in that series. So.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's people I need.
There are people that I need as well. Like even just a novella for the mom.
Oh,
Oh, I know.
Ashley's mom.
Ashley's
I'm gonna do,
mom.
yeah. And Clay.
And
I
Clay.
think I'm gonna do like a Christmas novella for those two.
Ooh,
Or
that'd be
if
good.
not a novella, at least like a reader magnet free story or something.
Yeah. Because I just want, well, first off, I loved Clay. Like I
Yeah.
thought he was like
Oh.
such a great character. But then when he like shows back up and he's like, oh yeah, she like this is what's going on. And everybody's like, how do you know what is going on?
It's like, yeah, because we've been having day dates at the
Yeah,
like,
those
go
two.
Clay. I
I
know, they're
love them.
adorable. I love them.
I did. I really enjoyed them,
Even
especially.
in your 70s, when your beloved husband dies, you still deserve a
Yeah,
chance, a second
exactly.
chance.
And yeah, and I also like even Bex, Cole's daughter. Like, I want to
Yes.
know what happens with her. Like, I love
Yeah.
her and Ruby so much.
I
So, but
know.
yeah.
They're good. They're solid. People want a Sam story too all the
Oh,
time.
yeah.
And I'm like, Sam and Izzy are solid. They're just,
Yeah.
there's not a story there. They're solid.
Yeah.
So,
Oh, okay. I feel like their
but
story, like with the way like it played out through the series, like
yeah, you
I
see
don't need
them.
anything from them. I'm
Yeah,
happy
they're
with
good.
them.
Yeah. Because even though, I mean, I love the fact that even though they're healing, Sam is still in Bluebird, right? Like he is
Yeah.
not ready to, yeah. So he's doing the work. But so for Bluebird 4 is Jen and Scott marriage
Yeah.
revival. And it
I
is going to be like it's one of those books where scenes from it already are like obsessing. I'm obsessed with them. So I think it's going to be really, really fun once I
I
get into
love a
that.
marriage in crisis. There's
Yeah, we're
just
big fans
something
of that.
about them
Oh yeah.
that I mean, I will say I've read some that were not good because I feel like they're a book that it's hard to do, but I love A Marriage in Crisis.
Oh, I think we lost.
What did
Are we
we?
frozen?
I think so. It's okay.
Uh-oh.
Maybe she'll be back.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. I think it's.
It's just a little delayed. We got some tech difficulties, friends, but that's okay.
It's me.
All right, we'll hold off just a second and see if she comes back.
Okay.
I thought it was me. Mike is just gonna have to cut this little section out.
Yeah.
I think it's me.
It's okay. If you turn your camera off, it should click back in.
Oh,
Oh,
there we
there
go.
you
Are we
go.
back?
We are
Yep.
back. It's okay. Mike, who is our IT guy and it's Becky's husband, he can
Yeah.
just cut this middle section out where we're like, we lost her, but that's okay.
Perfect.
But yeah,
Okay,
so
I
we
think we're
love the
back.
Marriage in Crisis.
Yes. Yes, and they are tough to do. Because depending on how bad you make the setup, how bad things got, what happened to break that marriage up. Yeah, they can be real tough.
Well,
Off.
and even like how they come back to each other too. Like I feel like sometimes it doesn't work. Like, and it's not believable
No,
that
you
they've
still
really
feel a lot
worked
of
through like their
Animosity still. Yeah, like,
problems.
yeah. So I'm up for the challenge. I'm really excited. Yeah. And Scott is just, and he's bigger than Madigan.
Oh.
The dude is yoked. He rides horses. He's like my love letter to Montana Cowboys, of which there are like some truly amazing. Yeah, I mean, you get
She has
everyone has
this
a
like
everyone
glazed, you
I
guys
know
can't see her right now, but she
everyone
has like this glazed over look as she's
has
talking of Montana Cowboys.
everyone has this view. I feel like, especially since the election, not to get political, but I've just been seeing a lot of viewpoints about Montana being a certain way. And historically, Montana has been very purple, a very purple state. We have a history of truly amazing Democratic leadership, like here, state-wise. Montana tends to vote Republican for the national election because it's just a state of rugged individualists who don't want to be told what to do by people who don't live here. And that is, we've seen that change significantly since COVID, especially. And so, yeah, when I talk to people and tell them I live in Montana, I get these looks, and it's heartbreaking. It is heartbreaking for everyone that lives here that doesn't share the same political belief system. Anyway, so yeah, he's my love letter to super liberal cowboys.
The Montana Cowboy. Well, I look forward to that, but I,
Yeah,
like I said,
someday.
I'm very intrigued by these sci-fi books
Yeah,
where I will
take a
be
little.
deep diving into that because I like it all.
Yes.
Good. Yeah, me too. Me too. I like to mix it up. It keeps
Well,
things,
and
fresh.
on that sci-fi high, thank
Yeah.
you so much, Jess, for joining us for
Yeah, it
this
was a
sci-fi
blast.
spotlight.
It was wonderful. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Amanda, for hopping on and joining me as my co-host tonight.
Yes, just thanks for letting me be around. I don't
Just
contribute much, but I'm just
just
here.
listening in, spouting in every once in a while. It's okay. It's like when Julie Garwood asked me if I was sleeping, so we won't ask you that one.
Oh boy.
And on
Yeah.
that one, until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.